The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you once again for listening. Today we are tackling infections from pets with guest expert Dr. Richard Ehler of the USF College of Medicine. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families each week through the immediate impact of health education. And as I do at this point every week when it's time leading up to our annual big event, the annual symposium, I'd like to give each and every one of you some information. It is our fifth annual event coming up, the Focus on Females, fifth annual Women's Healthcare Symposium. It is Saturday, March 27th at the Tampa Convention Center. It is free, and we have 22 seminars being given by physician experts, ranging from osteoporosis, colon cancer, cervical, ovarian, and uterine cancer, migraines and headaches, skin cancer, menopause, cardiac disease, sleep disorders, breast cancer, fertility, reversing dry eye, nutrition and cancer prevention, diabetes, bladder incontinence, raising your child without going crazy, allergies, asthma, obesity in women, screening for breast cancer, heart care and disease prevention for women, gynecological cancer, as well as looking more youthful without general anesthesia, and even financial wellness. In addition to these 22 seminars, we have healthcare screenings, we have fitness classes, 9 fitness classes, including yoga, Pilates, kickboxing, Tai Chi, stretching, Zumba fitness, circuit training, resistance training, all given by certified trainers, plus wellness massages. That's right, an entire day of health and medical information, identifying breakthroughs for your medical issues. We invite you all to register. You need to register to ensure a seat in the seminars you want to attend. That's Saturday, March 27th. You can register online by going to focusonfemales.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, there's a tab. Takes you right to the registration page. It'll take you 30 seconds or less to register to be sure that you have seats in those seminars as well as access to those free fitness classes and chair massages and health screenings and so forth. Our sponsors this year include Memorial Hospital of Tampa, Moffitt Cancer Center, USF Health, St. Joseph's Women's Hospital, and BayCare Health System, as well as others. So we have UCH is involved as well. So we have the really almost every single health institution, hospital institution in Tampa and Hillsborough County involved with this effort to identify breakthroughs for you to lead to a healthier life for you and your family. Okay, today's topic, infections from pets, and we have the good fortune to have an expert on this topic with us today. That's Dr. Richard Ehler. He is an infectious disease specialist and an associate professor of medicine at the USF College of Medicine and the James Haley Veterans Hospital in Tampa, Florida. He is an advisor to the Bella Moss Foundation, an international London-based charity dedicated to providing pet owners with information on pet-associated infections, where he helps many pet owners solve their pet-related health issues. He's also an enthusiastic dog owner. And so, Richard, it's great to have you here today.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
So let's start off at the beginning. Do you have any sense of epidemiology? How common is this problem where people can get infections from their pets?
Well, you know, I think that most people think about infections from their pets and they think about rabies. But interestingly, rabies is actually fairly uncommon in pets nowadays. You're much more likely to acquire or be exposed to rabies from a wild animal, from a raccoon, let's say, or a bat, than you are from your, you know, from your dog or cat at home. So actually, the most common infection that you see from a pet at home is probably a bite or a scratch.
Okay,
that's extremely common.
And in my world, things that I've seen over the years of practice in ophthalmology is cat scratch disease. Would you comment on that?
Well, cat scratch disease, for instance, is probably one of the 350,000 cases each year of people who have non-fatal injuries due to a pet. And cat scratch is a bacteria that is present in the oral cavity or, you know, in the mouth or the claws of a cat, let's say, but not always a cat, sometimes also other pets like dogs. And when an individual, particularly a young person, is exposed, let's say with a scratch, the bacteria can set up a skin infection that can then be spread to other areas of the body, and people can develop fever, they can get swollen lymph glands underneath their arm. Sometimes the condition can get much worse, and it's one of the most common of the pet exposures that people have and don't know about, and especially in kids.
So what would the top three common infections people pick up from their pets be?
Well, again, I think pet-associated skin disease is extremely common. Someone who, a young person, for example, gets a dog bite and ends up in an emergency department with a skin infection that has to be treated. An individual who gets scratched by a cat and gets a skin infection or a case of cat scratch disease, for example. Parasite infections from pets are also very common as well. Again, especially in young kids, because remember, our kids don't often know the proper way to interact with an animal. And also, they may put themselves in places such as playgrounds or areas where pets may go to the bathroom, for example, where they may be exposed to something where they can pick up an infection.
So now the cat scratch, of course, is a bacteria. I don't know how much detail we'll get into later in the show, but the bite of a cat from a cat or a dog is typically, again, a bacteria that is transmitted to the skin. That is the nature of the infection. You mentioned parasites, but is it predominantly bacteria?
Yeah, most of the bite associated infections are related to bacteria, but there are many different ways a young child, for instance, can pick up a parasite infection from. You know, usually it can be a worm, for example. We all have heard, for instance, of the dog heartworm. This is one of the reasons why you give your dog a medication each month. Believe it or not, some people have presented to their physician with a lung nodule that turns out to be the dog heartworm, which has ended up in the lung of a pet owner because they've had an exposure. And if there's one thing about infections of pets, they don't like being in humans that much, so they end up doing different things than they do in the pet. In this case, they end up in the lung of the pet owner as a lung nodule. And then the pet owner presents to their doctor, is this lung cancer? It turns out to be they were exposed to their pet.
And as far as parasites, is the way we get the infection transmitted to the humans through the handling of the animal feces?
That's one of the possible ways. But, just to give you an example, I think we've all heard of the dog hookworm. This infection, a person can be exposed by going to the dog beach, for example. This is one of the reasons why they tell you don't walk barefoot in a dog beach, because you can pick up the dog hookworm and can end up having something called cutaneous larva migrans. This mm-hmm. is a skin infection that gives you a creeping itch that doesn't get better until you see your doctor. Young kids, for example, babies can play in a sandbox where a dog has gone to the bathroom and develop, get bit, or rather ingest eggs from the dog roundworm, for example, and develop a fever and a constitutional illness. And people, of course, can pick up infections like toxoplasmosis from handling a litter pan, although it's much more common to eat contaminated food and come down with the illness.
Okay, so the major ways that we humans are exposed to parasites from animals is ingestion, or unintentional, of course, ingestion through exposure to eggs or other parasitic parasites in the feces. But also, if at these dog or pet beaches or parks, if we walk barefoot, and is it possible to step on a worm or and then embed it in the skin, and the infection takes off from there?
Yeah, this is one of the reasons why dogs are banned from beaches, because again, dogs can carry parasites in their stool, and if they have a bowel movement on a beach, for example, and someone unwittingly is exposed to that by stepping on it or laying in it, for example, they can come down with a parasite infection. So. Now, we all know that that dogs carry ticks and fleas too, and dogs and cats, and ticks and fleas are also ways that humans can come in contact with infections from pets.
Let's go back just briefly. So, if your child was bitten by a cat or a dog, is there anything to do in the immediate scenario besides washing with soap and water?
Well, unfortunately, dog and cat bite infections are extremely common. And as I said, there's about 350,000 encounters a year, and dog bites cost $1 billion a year in the U.S. And about two-thirds of bites are due to dogs, a third are due to cats. The most common breeds that are involved with exposures are often the pit bull and Rottweiler breeds, and that may not be inherent to the breed. It may just be that that those breeds are perhaps encouraged to be more aggressive or maybe trained that way. But nevertheless, if you do get a bite exposure in your child, for example, it's very important to wash the wound out very quickly. First of all, you want to get the dog away from the victim, and then. Once the child is safe, take the child to a place where they can have the wound washed out, and then they should go immediately to seek medical attention. Again, there's things like rabies, which you would have to be concerned about in an aggressive animal, or even setting up a serious skin infection of that tissue. It's important to remember that dog injuries a lot of the time cause crushing type injuries to the tissue, and that can cause disfigurement, and it can also set up serious deep infections. Whereas cats have very sharp teeth, and they tend to cause deeper injuries, oftentimes of joints around the hands, for example. If you're petting your cat and the cat bites your hand, they can conceivably a cat tooth can puncture your joint and set up a serious joint infection. Mm. So those should always receive medical attention.
So is it fair to say, let's say it's on the weekend, and your little child was bitten by a cat or a dog, if it's superficial, if you feel it's superficial, you, of course, as you mentioned before, remove the animal from the victim, wash out the wound, soap and water. If there's any foreign body in the wound, obviously, you can clean it out. Should that child go to, for example, an emergency room that day or an acute care center that day, or can they wait to the next day to go to the family doctor? What guidelines can you give our listeners as far as evaluating the rapidity of follow-up for that condition?
Well, I think, again, I'm a dog owner and have kids, and we've had situations where there's been a little nip of one of our kids or one of us, and I'd say if it doesn't really break the skin, if there's not bleeding and the child's tetanus status is up to date, then a little first aid is all that you'll need to do. But if it's a deep wound, if there's blood drawn, if the child is obviously injured and looks like they have had a significant injury, then those types of exposures do need medical attention, particularly if this is not a pet in your own household. If it's a pet from the neighbor or somewhere else, then and we don't know the status of the pet's rabies vaccination series, then those individuals definitely need to seek medical attention, and particularly because a lot of people are not up to date with their tetanus status, and tetanus is a potentially serious infection that is easily preventable.
Okay. Tell us, can one get an MRSA infection from their pet?
Well, this is something that that we're gaining increased awareness with in recent years. But many of our listeners know that have been hearing about the superbug, the MRSA superbug, which has been a significant problem, particularly with a new strain of MRSA called USA 300. This form of staph infection has led to a lot of skin infections and serious conditions in people who have never come into contact with the hospital. It used to be those of us in the medical field, such as yourself, would contact MRSA if we operated on or saw someone in the hospital who had a hospital-associated infection. But since this new strain, the USA 300 strain in particular, has come into existence, it basically has blurred those lines. And a lot of people get skin infections and other serious infections having never been in the hospital. And we've seen examples of this with sports teams, outbreaks in institutions, and kids in our schools who come down with a staph infection and the school has to be closed for decontamination, for example. It's in recent years become a growing concern that our pets in the household could be a part of that chain where someone, for example, with a staph infection who lives in the household spreads it to their pet, and then their pet either comes down with a serious infection or the pet has the potential to spread it to someone else in the household who may be sick or have a weakened immune system, and that person may come down with a serious staph infection.
So the pet could be a carrier without showing clinical signs as well.
That's right. It's not really clear if pets in the household carry staph infections for an extended period of time, but it is believed that they can play a role. And this has been evidenced by numerous published cases of individuals who work in a healthcare setting, let's say, and they come down with a staph infection. There's an outbreak in the hospital, and then they trace, where did the infection come from? And they ultimately find that the dog in the individual's household is a carrier of the staph infection. And when they eliminate the staph infection from the dog, basically the chain of spread of the staph infection is broken, and the infection pattern resolves.
Excellent. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we'll have Ms. Jill Moss, who runs the Bellot Moss Foundation charity, the international London-based charity dedicated to providing pet owners with information on pet-associated infections. In the meantime, others, feel free to call in with your questions. Here in Hillsborough County, we're at 289-1860, 289-1860. Elsewhere, it's toll-free, 877-969-8600. Be right back.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
For one moment, close your eyes and imagine asking a physician expert about a breakthrough for your medical problem. Now imagine 22 experts able to answer questions on a wide variety of medical topics, all in a comfortable, relaxed environment. This is Dr. Steve Maskin inviting you to join me at the Tampa Convention Center Saturday, March 27th. It's the 5th Annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium. Register online at focusonfemales.com. It's a free event. See you then.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, I'd like to encourage everyone now to call us with their question about infections from pets. It could be it could be about dog, cat. It could be about any animal, pet animal, that is, and potential or any issue relating to infections from that pet. Again, in Hillsborough County, 289-1860, 289-1860. Otherwise, outside of Hillsborough County, we're at 877-969-8600. That's 877-969-8600. And at this point, I'd like to bring in Ms. Jill Moss, who runs the Bella Moss Foundation from London, England. And this foundation is dedicated to providing you, the pet owner, with information on pet-associated infections, helping many pet owners solve their pet-related health issues. Jill, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes. You're coming in loud and clear. I want to welcome you today to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic here in the States.
Thank you for having me on the program, and it's great to be able to have this opportunity to raise awareness of our work, and of course with Richard, who's one of our advisors in the USA. So it's really good. Thank you.
And thank you for spending part of your Sunday with us. Can you give us some background on your charity, your foundation, and what you all more detail what you do?
Well, it started 4 years ago. My dog Bella, who I was very attached to, like a member of my family, she had an MRSA infection. And basically, because she was misdiagnosed, she suffered terribly and died of something that could have been prevented. At that time, there was no information on the internet, and I was horrified to learn that animals could get MRSA, you know, from basically hygiene not being as good as it could be in veterinary practice. And I took up a campaign here in England to raise awareness, and I got the backing of the media and the government as well. And it turned into something that I never would have expected in a million years, but Bella was the tip of the iceberg. And lo and behold, I set up a website, and I was inundated with inquiries from all over the world, from pet owners, doctors, health practitioners, veterinarians. And it really did seem that I had started something. There was clearly a need for a charity concerned with infection control transmitted between humans and animals. And it began that way in 2004, just soon after she died.
Before we forget, what is that website that people can go to?
It's www.thebellamossfoundation.com.
So the Bella Moss being B-E-L-L-A-M-O-S-S?
That's correct. Bella Moss Foundation, www.thebellamossfoundation.com. Okay. If you Google it, it will come up really quickly.
All right, great. So you have – say someone's got a question on this matter. Is there an email they send to you? How does that work? What's the logistics of it?
Well, what happens is we've now set up, it's a non-for-profit charity, and through donations and through funding, we have recruited a team of specialists, both veterinary and health specialists, including Richard, because we can't give medical advice. We're not trained vets or doctors, but our experts can intervene on cases. And this way, we can raise awareness, make sure that there's early detection of infections, and turn around lives, you know, from animals that could be dying to animals that can survive this through early detection. So through a team of our voluntary specialist experts, we can intervene and help anybody that gets in touch with us by us putting our experts in touch with their experts. So it's a direct service, and it doesn't cost anything.
Okay, so you basically are bringing the experts together to help the individual
right.
with the problem.
Absolutely, yeah. And therefore, these experts have all been trained in infection control, and they know about the epidemiology and how infections work between humans and animals, and they're quite happy to talk to anybody's health practitioner or veterinarian on clinical cases and management of cases in humans and animals.
That's outstanding. Richard, would you like to make a comment here?
Yes, I just think that the Bella Moss Foundation is such a great resource, again, not just for people in Europe, but here in the States where, you know, in some ways we have a bigger problem because we have a lower recognition of this, you know, this syndrome and of the relationship between pets and humans and infections. And Jill has just done an outstanding job in this capacity, and it's our hope that we can increase awareness. I know that Jill is coming to the U.S. In another month or two to do some networking and education here. And so, I would encourage anyone who's listening to call in, and perhaps we can handle your questions today about your pet.
And may I say one other thing?
Please.
This is the thing. I started this really not knowing what on earth I was doing, but it does seem that through our resources of government now and corporate funding, we've put on some international conferences, bringing together world-leading experts to look at the risks of cross-infection between humans and animals. And it's evident, quite frankly, now that most of the inquiries I'm getting are from the United States. We're seeing a lot of increase in cases of animals developing infections. But what I must say to anyone listening is this is not something to be frightened of, as with bird flu or swine flu. This is an opportunistic bacteria that only really becomes a danger or a threat to an animal once it enters broken skin. So it's very avoidable and preventable in that sense. So you don't need to panic and worry about healthy animals picking up MRSA infections. What we're seeing mainly is animals with compromised immune systems or living in households with people people who have MRSA infections becoming infected in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Very good. All right. Excellent. Excellent. And I think that just like any medical or health issue, awareness is key. I have to say that I was not aware of what you do, your foundation. And I think that our listeners today have become aware, and they will share it with their friends, neighbors, colleagues, and so forth, and gradually continue to get the word out so that bringing the expert together with the individual need, I think, is the key, how we can transcend the issues that we are all facing in health
and
medicine.
And that's what the Bella Moss Foundation is all about. We're a charity that really are, you know, passionate to educate and inform and do that in a non-scaremongering way. So we empower people with knowledge, and this way we can prevent, you know, infections taking place in the very beginning if we know what we're looking for and we know what we can do to avoid it happening.
Have you been, Richard mentioned that you're coming to the States another month or two. Have you been
yes.
here before?
Well, no, not for many, many years, but this is an exciting visit because we have talks in New York and in Florida. I do wish that I could crack the United States like I have done here. It's a tiny country, England and Ireland. We've managed to put series of networks and some seminars out for vets all over the United Kingdom. It only took about 3 months, but there's no way that we can possibly reach everywhere in the United States. So hopefully it will be the first of many visits.
Great. Maybe a more personal note, have you decided to get another pet, or what's your...
Do you know something? I would love to have another dog, but my life has become now so committed to running the foundation, and I go away a lot to give talks. And I just think that, you know, it's been put in my path to do this work, to help empower people, to help save lives. And one day when I'm not traveling so much, maybe, you know, when I'm home-based a bit more, I would love to have animals. But who knows? Maybe one day we'll have our own veterinary clinic. That would be my aim ultimately.
Outstanding. All right. Any last thoughts, anybody?
Well, I would just add that one of the things that we're working with in this country is something that perhaps Jill Moss and her associates and the professionals in Britain have been able to accomplish, which is to bring the veterinary and the medical professions together more to work on this problem. And I think there's a tradition in Britain of a collegiality between the two professions, but again, America is such a big country, and sometimes the veterinary and the medical professions kind of work on a different substrate, if you will, and so getting them to work together, and we've had a lot of success there. There's some great professionals. I'll mention in particular Dr. Weiss of the University of Guelph in Canada, who has spearheaded some. Publications and educational campaigns and just getting the veterinary professionals and the medical professionals to get together on the problem. And that's something that we're going to strive to continue to work on in the U.S. and Canada.
I think this is the key. And Dr. Andrew Hillier, also based at Ohio,
yes.
We've managed to get some really good experts, both in the veterinary and in the human health world, together to talk about this. And the ultimate aim for my passion, really, my vision, is to bring the two different professions very much together in looking at ways of preventing infection spreading from humans to animals and vice versa. There's a lot of research out there. I do think the key is just raising awareness of the issue and doing it in a responsible way that doesn't frighten people.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much for being with us today, Jill. And I hope and encourage each one of our listeners that have pets to visit your website to get more information about the details of what you do and have done in a successful way over these last several years. And I hope and know that you'll have a wonderful trip here to the States and a very productive trip, I certainly hope, and Godspeed.
Thank you so much for having me, and I do wish I was there now because it's pouring with rain.
Okay, be well now. Okay, let's take a quick break, come back more. Again, now's the time. Call in with your questions, 289-1860, 289-1860. Elsewhere outside Hillsborough County is toll-free, 877-969-8600. Be right back.
Talk Radio, 860 WGUL.
it's Mike Gallagher. Voters in Massachusetts and New Jersey have sent a message that America's headed in the wrong direction. Unfortunately, President Obama, the Democrats, and the mainstream media aren't listening. Now more than ever, you need intelligent, thoughtful information to stay involved in the fight to turn the country around. Sign up today at townhall.com to get free daily briefings of conservative news, analysis, and opinion from folks like Ann Coulter, Michelle Malkin, and many more. Log on to townhall.com. That's www.townhall.com.
For one moment, close your eyes and imagine asking a physician expert about a breakthrough for your medical problem. Now imagine 22 experts able to answer questions on a wide variety of medical topics, all in a comfortable, relaxed environment. This is Dr. Steve Maskin inviting you to join me at the Tampa Convention Center Saturday, March 27th. It's the 5th annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium. Register online at focusonfemales.com. It's a free event. See you then.
With so much confusion about Medicare these days, it's good to have someone with clear answers. With WellCare, it's all about getting the Medicare Advantage plan that's right for you. You'll get the same coverage as original Medicare, plus lots of extra benefits and a choice of great doctors in the Tampa Bay area. There's no obligation, just straight talk about your options. Call 1-866-907-6682 to find out about our great events near you. Now's the time to get a new Medicare health plan. So call 1-866-907-6682 today. That's 1-866-907-6682. 1-866-907-6682. Get the Medicare you deserve. You've earned it. You deserve it. That's the WellCare way.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, this is Dr. Maskin, Steve Maskin, and Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today's topic is infections from pets, and with me is guest expert Dr. Richard Ayler of the USF College of Medicine, infectious disease specialist, who I might add has recently authored two articles in the peer-reviewed literature on infectious disease and infections from pets. And so, again, we welcome any question at all at 289-1860 in Hillsborough County, 289-1860. Outside of Hillsborough County, toll-free, 877-969-8600. Now's the time. Pick up your cell phone and give us a call with your questions. Richard, tell our listeners, what are some safe strategies for avoiding pet-associated infections?
Well, again, I think the biggest threat that we have in our family is our kids, because a lot of times if you have a young kid, they don't have a lot of experience with pets, especially dogs and especially pets that aren't their own, so they may have behaviors or just not be aware of the proper way to interact with pets. My daughter, for instance, when we first got a dog, didn't know that you weren't supposed to really put your face near a pet. And a couple times I had to tell her, please don't put your head near the pet, because, you know, the pet, a dog, for instance, uses its mouth as a hand. And so they may want to, they may see that as a threat and want to remove your head from around them. They may get nervous, and so you could get a bite on your face. And bites on faces are extremely common among kids. Another way is how to approach a dog. Again, if a strange dog starts barking at you, it's important not to look at the dog because they see that as a threat.
I think we should emphasize that. Do not look at the dog.
Right. You should not look at the dog, and allow the dog to come up with you. Don't pretend that the dog is not there and let him sniff you. This is a strategy that in my own life has gotten me out of dog encounters in many cases. It's also important not to run from a dog, because a dog sees you running away as a threat and will chase after you, and perhaps that will increase the likelihood that you'll have an unfortunate encounter such as a bite. So those are some safe strategies. It's also important to educate your kids about dogs and how a strange dog may see them as a threat, to avoid going into backyards where a dog could see you coming in as a threat. And also, when you pet a dog, you generally want to hold your hand down rather than up, because an upheld hand is seen as a threat, and it's also seen as possibly that you have some food in your hand.
So by that, you're talking about the palm should be down.
Exactly. The palm should be down. Mm-hmm. when you're meeting a pet and they're... An unfamiliar pet. When they're perhaps sniffing you to make sure that that they feel comfortable with you being around.
Mm. And the other things that make an increased risk of pet-associated infections with kids. I mean, we talked before on break about how kids, of course, would love to run around barefoot.
That's right. Being barefoot in a pet environment carries the risk of, for instance, coming in contact with pet waste that may be in a yard, for instance. That could put you at risk for parasites. Also, you may contact other pet objects that could injure your feet. Being barefoot, especially in areas where pets congregate, such as a dog park, for instance, or a strange yard where a dog lives, could definitely increase your risk of coming down with a pet-associated infection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems to be very, very important, I think, tip for parents, because, of course, kids love being barefoot outside as well as inside.
Definitely. And having some safe strategies there is really important and can keep your child safe.
Let's talk about some exotic things. And speaking about exotic, how about exotic pets?
Well, exotic pets are, it seems like the public goes through phases where some pets become very popular. We remember, ferrets. I remember a few years ago that iguanas were a big rage in exotic pets. Unfortunately, the iguanas got very big, and before too long, people didn't want to live with them anymore, so they released them out into the wild. And now there's a major problem with wild iguanas in Florida, particularly in some places like the Everglades, where, these pets, again, people got tired of them and they were released into the wild. But in addition to that, some types of exotic pets can cause infections. An example of that is prairie dogs, and someone may remember that several years ago, giant Gambian rats were a favorite pet, and these were actually imported from Africa, and subsequent experience has shown that there was a disease very similar to smallpox called monkeypox that was spread to the U.S., and there were outbreaks of monkeypox in the U.S., and it was ultimately traced back to these giant Gambian rats. Prairie dogs are a favorite pet in some places in the country, and these have been shown to carry fleas that can spread diseases like plague, which is a significant disease in the western U.S. where there's a sort of low-level activity of plague that continues to occur, year-round in that part of the country. So exotic pets, you know, check with your veterinarian, do some research on the internet, and make sure that you're not bringing an exotic disease home in addition to your exotic pet.
And how about rabbits? I mean, some people don't look at rabbits as exotic. I wouldn't think of them as exotic. And yet rabbits, hares, and, of course, rats, mice, all potentially can cause a disease called tularemia.
That's right. Rabbits, I'd say probably the number one risk from rabbits would probably be bite-associated infections, because rabbits can be kind of aggressive at times. But also rabbits can spread tularemia, which is a bacterial infection that can, again, cause a systemic infection, can make you very sick, in some cases pneumonia, severe illness requiring hospitalization, can give you skin disease, eye issues. You can become very sick from tularemia. It's also spread by fleas and ticks and
mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes, not as much, but certainly arthropods like ticks, for example, can spread tularemia, and can place yourself and certainly in some cases other pets at risk of a serious infection.
How about lice?
Lice are well-known causes of infectious disease. Not as much in pets, but again, lice have for many years been associated with significant infections, things like typhus and relapsing fever and other conditions. So again, all of these arthropods are potential sources of infections for people.
And I bring that up, of course, because every now and again, kids are sent home from school with lice.
Right, and most domestic lice in a setting like a school are more of a exposure problem and a communicability problem necessarily, but you know the potential is always there, and again we need to be aware of the these types of outbreaks and control them so that our kids can stay healthy.
Going back to the rabbits, so not necessarily bitten by a rabbit, but if a person has skinned or cleaned a rabbit, or killed a rabbit for that matter, they also could be at risk for developing tularemia, I understand.
Yes, that's correct. Any handling of the tissue of an infected animal could potentially bring you at risk of being exposed to tularemia, and certainly also potentially other viral infections like rabies, for instance. So, it's important to be aware of these risks, not to alarm anyone, but just awareness is important so you can stay safe with your activities, whether they involve a pet or not.
And once again, I'd like to share our phone number to call in with your questions. In Hillsborough County, it's 289-1860, 289-1860. Outside of Hillsborough County, it's 877-969-8600. That's 877-969-8600. And going to information resources for pet owners to avoid pet-associated infections. I think you mentioned you have a website. Is that accessible for listeners?
Well, I have as a associate professor at USF, I have a passion for education in addition to this topic, and so I've put together a website. It's at www.idpodcasts.net. And there's some information, particularly podcasts or short presentations on all sorts of infectious disease topics, including pet-associated infections. So although this is medically oriented, I've gotten a lot of messages from the general public about how they appreciate these lectures, and it's kind of an opportunity to peer inside a medical media to look at what doctors look at. I invite everybody to check out that website and hear a lot of useful information on infectious disease topics. It's also available on iTunes, and hopefully soon we'll have some other ways to access that information as well.
How about birds? Some people have bird houses and consider their bird as a pet. Of course, there's bird droppings everywhere. And once, several years ago, is a funny story, I guess other people, on a rare occasion, I was actually hit in the head by a bird. And so is there not potential infectious disease transmitted through that mechanism?
Definitely. But again, any type of animal exposure can put you at risk, not just with bacteria from the bird, for instance, or the other animal, but your own bacteria on your skin. Any type of wound can do that, can put you at risk for exposure to staph. You can also get some more sort of exotic bacterial infections from birds or that type of exposure. So that is definitely possible. I remember a couple years ago, in fact, hearing about a poor unfortunate woman who was swimming on the beach, and a seagull ran right into her and caused her injury. So I know that those types of exposures occur. In the household with pet birds, the leading infection that we sort of worry about is called psittacosis, and this is oftentimes a primarily respiratorily transmitted illness that people can get that can lead to a pneumonia in humans. However, I would say it's relatively less common. In my practice as an infectious disease specialist, I've not seen too many cases of psittacosis related to pet birds. But I would say in general, if your pet bird is not healthy, get them evaluated. And if you're a pet bird owner and you have a respiratory illness, it's important to see your doctor, and you can be screened for this type of condition.
And for people that want to read about psittacosis, that's spelled with the beginning of the P, correct? P-S-I.
Yeah, P-S-I, T-T-A-C-O-S-I-S, I believe, if I'm getting that correct.
And that falls under the genus of chlamydia, right? That's a chlamydia organism.
It's a type of chlamydia, but not the type of chlamydia that most people associate with STDs and so forth. This is a type of chlamydia that that causes psittacosis and is distinct from the STD and again is associated with some types of birds. Wild birds in general also play a role in other significant infections such as West Nile virus, but again that's not predominantly associated with your pet bird.
Well, I'd like to thank Dr. Ehler as we're wrapping up today's show for this topic, infections from pets. We've really covered a wide variety of types of infections that to consider. And I'd like to ask Richard at this point any final thoughts as we are entering our last minute of the show.
Well, I wanted to echo what my colleague Jill Moss said earlier on in the hour, which is education is always a good thing. We're not trying to alarm people, but I hope we've covered some topics today that have helped people and that will allow people to keep themselves healthy and to keep their pets healthy.
Excellent. And next week, next Sunday, on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic, we are moving on to colorectal cancer with guest expert Dr. Jürgen Nord. Following that, I'm going to rapid fire the next several weeks. Kidney stones, lymphoma, myeloma, women and feet, dry eye, migraines. That takes us to mid-April. And again, I'd like to remind each and every one of you, March 27th is our big 5th annual Women's Healthcare Symposium. As I mentioned earlier in the show, topics are for men and women, not just women. And so be sure to visit our website, focusonfemales.com, and go to the registration tab and register to make sure you have a seat in the seminars you wish to attend. That's March 27th, Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium. In the meantime, this is Steve Maskin wishing each and every one of you a happy and safe week. See you next week.